You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we talk to a researcher about the state of science literacy in the United States and how we compare to the rest of the world.
First, when fossils of human ancestors are displayed in a museum, they become the center of an exhibit, and you could say that the remains can take on a life of their own. Think of Lucy, a female human ancestor that was found in Ethiopia in the 1970s. None of us knew her, but we all seem invested in knowing more about her. The nearly 3.2 million-year-old skeleton made headlines this week when a new study said it finally figured out how Lucy died. She probably fell from a tree.
Our next guest just released a book that explores the controversies, exhibitions, and stories that make fossils like Lucy into celebrities. Lydia Pine is a writer and historian who focuses on the history of science and material culture. Her book, Seven Skeletons, The Evolution of the World's Most Famous Human Fossils, is out now. Lydia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, we think of fossils probably as, oh, these important scientific specimens. They tell us about the history of the world. You kind of go beyond that into how some fossils become almost pop culture celebrities. Why did you want to tackle that?
I love the idea of exploring why some scientific discoveries become famous and others don't. I felt that it was important to sort of peel back the layers and to say it's not just because of its scientific importance that something becomes celebrity or it becomes famous, but I wanted to see the culture and the history and the media and the everything else that sort of surrounds a celebrity scientific discovery, and I felt that fossils were a great way to do that.
Oh, I wonder if just a good name is one of the common themes that makes it. Because, I mean, Lucy is better than, you know, fossil AX13 or something like that. The Piltdown Man on the opposite side of reality is another catchy name. Is just almost, maybe not even on purpose, but that sort of branding part of what, or The Hobbit, of course, is that what part of what captures our imagination?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. That certainly if a fossil is going to become a celebrity, it has a catchy nickname. It has something that is easy to identify with, that it's a name that you can anthropomorphize or personify, and that with these kind of names, fossils can take on these personas. They can become ambassadors for science.
Now, you looked at seven particular skeletons as examples here, and you write you could have done more or fewer, but seven seemed like a good amount. What's the common thread behind this magnificent seven group of fossils?
I like that title. I almost wish now that we had been able to incorporate the magnificent seven.
It's been used, though, so, yeah.
It has. What I think the common thread, though, between these seven is first of all, the fossil is discovered at a time when certain questions are very prevalent in science, and that the fossil is able to answer certain questions that are sort of at the forefront of scientific inquiry. But it also manages to capture public imagination at the same time that it's discovered. And so it has these sort of dual threads that propel it towards celebrity, both scientific importance, but also it resonates in a cultural way, whether it's Neanderthal at the beginning of the 20th century or The Hobbit at the beginning of the 21st. There are sort of cultural reasons for people to want to be curious about them.
Is it just that they tell a story, you know, with the popularity of TED Talks and other things like that, science, but in a catchy story form? Is that what captures the public imagination?
I think that it definitely captures public imagination with the story form, but I also think that sort of having this character, this familiar sort of fossil, this sort of familiar persona is a way of identifying and making human evolution, which is very abstract, a way of feeling much more personal and much more real. And so I think that these become familiar characters that we can identify with.
We're talking to Lydia Pine. Her new book is called Seven Skeletons, The Evolution of the World's Most Famous Human Fossils, looking at how some of our early human ancestors became celebrities in a way millions of years after they died. And Lydia, you've seen some of these up close and personal, including one from South Africa. And it was the awe of the situation was a little bit dissipated, I think. Can you talk through that story?
Sure. So when I was an undergraduate, I had the opportunity to attend a paleoanthropology field school that was held in South Africa. And as part of this field school, we went to the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg to see famous fossils and to see these fossils that were very much part of South Africa's history of paleoanthropology. Professor Philip Tobias at that point was sort of South Africa's living legend of a very eminent paleoanthropologist, and was responsible for giving us this fossil demo, for talking us through all of these different meaningful fossils in South Africa's history. And at the point that he was getting ready to show off the Tong child, all of us undergraduates were just so excited to see the real thing. We had all seen casts and replicas, but we hadn't seen the real thing before. And so we were just on the edges of our seats to see it. And so he pulls it out of the box and sort of starts having its little mandible clack against the teeth of it, of its upper teeth, and sort of starts to do this ventriloquy act. And all of us were just shocked. I mean, it was just, this is, you know, it was sort of like putting a mustache on the Mona Lisa or something. It was just this dissonance that we couldn't wrap our heads around of how could somebody so famous treat something like this so famous? How could that happen? And what struck me, though, in doing the research for Seven Skeletons, and what struck me as really interesting, is that just about anybody who had met Professor Tobias when he was alive and had seen him do this demo, they would tell you the same story. And that struck me, that that story, sort of having that ventriloquy act, was just as much a part of this fossil's life as its caliper measurements and its CT scans, but it added this cultural dimension to it.
And with the something like the Tong child, I mean, you were saying you approach it almost like, you know, we might approach the Mona Lisa. It's this thing we've heard about, and there's something special about being in its presence, witnessing the real thing. They become scientific, but almost spiritual icons, it seems like.
I think so. I think that there's definitely a sense that these fossils become these cultural touchstones. And it strikes me that we use them sort of as quick shorthand or cultural reference. Anytime a new fossil is published or there's a media blip about a new fossil that's been discovered, it will almost invariably contain a reference to Lucy, for example, that a fossil will be older than Lucy. It'll be younger than Lucy. It walked bipedally, just like Lucy. And so it struck me that these fossils, these celebrity fossils, become ways for us to identify with and to really sort of create a narrative about human evolution.
Is there a lesson here for scientists and science writers to help communicate with the public, but in a good, positive way? You know, when we hear about a new fossil, human origins are really complicated, and you can really dig down into the weeds here, and I think that a lot of it can be eye-glazing. Is there a way to take what you've learned from these celebrity fossils and make scientific communication more successful?
Well, I think that Lucy actually can be a really great example of that, sort of finding something that is familiar, a fossil that's familiar, and sort of being able to use that to talk about, as you point out, human origins that are incredibly complex. Sort of having a fossil that's familiar, that this new discovery, or that this discovery that scientists are looking at in a new way, that there's a way of referring to these celebrities as guiding posts, or as sort of characters that are familiar. And I think that there's a lot of value in that. It sort of keeps you, I think, from having to reinvent the wheel or re-explain things all the time.
Well, one of those stories that's been in the news this week is, again, Lucy, with maybe the mystery of her, I didn't know it was being treated as a mystery, but the mystery of her death maybe being solved. What do you think about this news that, you know, there's been this analysis, it looks like she might have fallen out of the tree, which is starting arguments. Does that mean she and her species lived in trees? What are your thoughts on that?
So I think that the paper that's come out actually touches on a very long debate that's sort of been at the heart of Lucy and Lucy's species, of just how much time did Lucy spend in the trees, just how much time did she walk around bipedally, sort of what does all of that mean. I think that the jury is still kind of out with seeing sort of how this discovery resonates. But one of the things that really I found to be interesting was how the paper was reported, how her death was reported. And everything that I would see would say, you know, the world's most famous fossil. And it struck me that because it was Lucy, that there's this interest in the discovery and sort of in her death that if we were looking at, you know, specimen ABC123, we probably wouldn't have that kind of coverage about. And so it felt like it very much reinforced this idea that people, both inside and outside of the scientific communities, are committed to being interested in Lucy.
Lydia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Lydia Pine. She's a writer and historian who looks at the history of science. Her new book is Seven Skeletons, The Evolution of the World's Most Famous Human Fossils.